You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36. I was on the fence about pregnancy and all I heard was, you do realise you're classed as geriatric now and careful you don't miss the boat. But now I'm pregnant, it's sleep will never be the same again, you know. Yeah, I do know. Thanks. But despite deciding to baby, there's still so much more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejecters and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Mel about becoming a solo mum.
I at the beginning thought, is this fair? Is it fair on a child to bring them into the world without a father figure? But I did loads of thinking about that and thought, do you know what? I've got some amazing guys in my life. My daughter will not be without good male role models.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and bestie, Camilla. Hi, here we are again.
I know. I'm in a different room this time. I'm trying to vary it up in the house to... Yeah, make it a bit more exciting, you know. Got a cup of tea as well.
You know, like some people, to try and make their lives exciting, try and have sex in every room of their house. And you're like, no, I want to just try and do my podcast in every room of my house.
Oh, okay. I wasn't expecting that response.
Where are we today?
Oh, I don't even know what room you'd call it, really. The spare room? The get ready room?
The get ready room.
My mother-in-law's staying room.
Yeah, it was my room as well.
Yeah, your stay. Yeah, so the guest bedroom. That sounds better.
Oh my God, but that makes you sound dead fancy.
Oh, fancy schmancy.
Now, I feel a bit nervous because there's something that I want to talk about at the start of this episode, because one of the whole reasons and purposes for doing this podcast is to try and help all of us to have more honest conversations around our parenting choices and such like. And something happened this week where I know for a fact that some people, when I tell this story, will judge me, and not in a good way.
Oh.
But the reason that I want to talk about it is because sharing is caring. So basically, I read Clemmie Hooper, the famous midwife, she also does a podcast. I read her book. It's called something like How to Grow a Baby and Push It Out, or something along those lines. And in her book, as a midwife, she has said after the first trimester, in terms of drinking alcohol, 1 to 2 units, 1 to 2 times a week is okay and is the given guideline type thing. So I've gone, okay, brilliant, fine. This means I can have the occasional glass of wine, and I have been doing throughout the second trimester. And this is the point where I'm like, I can almost feel like a sharp intake of breath from some people like, you are drinking wine in your second trimester. Now, the reason that I am having the odd glass of wine is personally because that makes me feel like the normal version of me. And it was a medical professional who said, this is part of the guidelines. And it turns out it was part of the guidelines, but during a Zoom quiz with a big group of mine and Dan's friends the other night, this came up because I was drinking a glass of wine. And one of the girls said to me, you do know that they changed the guidelines in 2018, and now you're not supposed to drink at all.
Oh, this, I mean, you're opening a can of worms. It didn't make me have a sharp intake of breath, by the way.
Yeah, but you know me too well.
Yeah, I wasn't shocked. No, God, it's changed so much, isn't it? Like my hubby's mum, when she was pregnant back in the day, she was low on iron and her midwife was telling her to drink blooming Guinness every day.
And this is the thing. So basically, I had an appointment 2 weeks ago with my new midwife in Bristol, who, by the way, was flipping lovely. And when you register at a new care provider, you have to give them the whole details all over again. You have to have all the blood tests. You have to have this 2-hour appointment where they ask you every question under the sun. And she asked, are you drinking any alcohol? And I said, honestly, yes, I am. I'm probably having a glass of wine once a week because I read this book, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, it's fine. And I said, thank God for that, because I thought you were going to tell me off. And she said, no. She said, we are advised to tell everybody that you should try and not drink any alcohol at all, but it is a bit blurred lines. So honestly, it's fine. Don't worry about it. But then when I had this call, and do you know what? I don't know if anyone in our quiz group, so how many of us were there in total? Were there 10 or 11 of us? I don't know if anyone actually was judging me. But in that moment, I felt like, oh my God, this is a sign of things to come. And this is what it's going to be like when I'm a mum and somebody is judging your every parenting move. And it made me feel terrified of like not being able to cope with that when the baby's here.
I don't like that. That makes me sad and a bit annoyed as well.
But it was like, nobody did anything. And to be fair, my lovely friend, who was the one to say, oh, by the way, did you know that these are the rules, was actually telling me the story because one of her friends had done the same thing and was then drinking a gin and tonic. And she's 2 weeks behind me in pregnancy. So there wasn't any actual judgment. But you know, when you're just like,
yeah, you just feel like it's
people
there.
People judging me.
I think the thing is, your choices change anyway when you're pregnant and then when you have a child, because it's not just about you anymore. So that will change anyway. And to be honest, I mean, maybe I'm lucky. I'm a little bit like, screw what you think. I'm going to do what's right for me. I think at the beginning, when you feel like it's all so new, you can feel like you're judged because you might feel like other people know better than you do.
And that's a bit what I felt like in this. So as soon as I got off the quiz, I went away and did loads of reading and research on it to be like, oh my God, I need to educate myself to know. My main thing as well as feeling judged was like, oh my God, have I done something wrong? And have I put the baby at risk, thinking that I wasn't putting the baby at risk?
I really don't think so at all. I think it's definitely a choice thing. I mean, for me, I don't really drink anyway, so it wasn't difficult for me to just cut it out completely. Also, someone did, and this is definitely not me judging you, so don't even think it for a second, but okay, somebody did show me a video of kind of what happens if you drink alcohol to the baby, and it basically, the baby goes to sleep a little bit, and that made me feel a bit uneasy. So that did make me go, I'm just not sure about that. But that being said, if I was a person that liked drinking wine, I wouldn't have denied myself the odd wine during pregnancy, even having seen that video. And it literally would have just been the odd wine.
I think the issue is that deep down, I know that, of course, if I drink no alcohol, that is what's going to be best for the baby. Mm-hmm. But I still feel like I want to have an odd glass of wine every now and again because it makes me feel more sane and more normal. And then I go, oh my God, but is that really so? Like I feel conflicted about it. And I think that's why this situation played into my insecurities.
In the words of Carrie Underwood, I don't drink. Sometimes I need a stiff drink. I don't smoke, but sometimes I need a smoke break.
So, Mel, in your own words, please, can you explain your parenting situation?
I can. So I am solo mum to my daughter, Daisy, who is actually 2 today. And I had her at Manchester Fertility Clinic using IVF with donor sperm.
Talk me through your kind of thought process before that.
So basically, I was living the life of Riley, honestly. So with my job, I'd lived abroad for 7 years. I'd lived in Mumbai, in Johannesburg, and then in Budapest, and was having a lovely time. But I was coming up to 37 and thinking, I'm single, age isn't necessarily on my side. Am I going to run out of time? So I kept on thinking, I'll just give it another 6 months because, you know, surely I'll be able to meet someone. And another 6 months and another 6 months, you know, takes me to, to that point, it took me to 37. And I thought, actually, I'm now looking for someone for the wrong reasons. I'm looking for someone to be a sperm donor, not to be a partner. And I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to do this because the fear of missing out on motherhood for me was greater of the fear of doing it on my own.
How do you think you knew that, because that's a big commitment to make on your own, how do you think you knew that you were destined to become a mom effectively?
Do you know, I just never really considered the not being. So I was in a long-term relationship when I was in my 20s, and I presumed that I would get married and then probably early 30s have children. I never really thought about it too much. I think it was just always an assumption. It's what my mum did. It's what a lot of my friends were doing. I just presumed I would. And it was only when I just wasn't meeting the right person in my 30s that I thought, oh my goodness, this isn't a given. Like, I might not meet someone, and meeting someone seems to be the only way to have a baby. And then I was like, actually, maybe it isn't the only way to have a baby. And that's when I started looking into, could I do this on my own?
So where do you start with that stuff?
So at that time, I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't met anyone who'd done it. Honestly, I hadn't even heard of anyone who'd done it. So I did feel quite alone in this situation where I was like, gosh, it's only me who's in this situation. But what I did, of course, Googled it, the starting point of everything, and then was directed to a fertility clinic. So I called a fertility clinic and made an appointment to go down and have a consultation, and that's where it all started. I think now there's so much more information out there. So, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm coaching other people considering doing this. And if I would have been in that situation, it would have been so nice just to know a single other person who'd done it. So yeah, there's lots of information available for people now of where to start, but getting in touch with the clinic is definitely a good starting point.
How did you feel when you'd made the first appointment and going to that first appointment, like, this is real now?
So interestingly, I talk a lot about I'm a bit of a control freak, and I felt totally out of control about this whole situation because I was like, I cannot control my own destiny of having a baby because I can't control if I can meet someone or not. And when I'd made the decision, I felt actually for a small period of time back in control. Okay, I've taken this decision. I'm taking it back into my hands. I'm doing it. So I felt good, and I felt in control. Then I went to the appointment, and it all happened much more quickly than I thought. So in the appointment, they started saying, so you could do this on your following cycle. And I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. So we just, like, it's quite quick once you've made that decision. And then when you start the journey, if you talk to anyone who's on a fertility journey, you start to feel back out of control again because it can be a difficult journey. So a roller coaster, I guess, along the way.
So from that first meeting, what was the kind of time frame of events that followed that?
So I did just go for it. So I think it was 2 months later, approximately, that I went in and started the medication for IVF. That goes on over a couple of weeks. And then I had my eggs collected. And then just personally for me, I overstimulated, which is quite common. And so I got 3 embryos and they froze them all. Usually you would have one transferred straight away, but I wasn't in the best position to do that. So came back the following month and had that embryo transferred. And unfortunately that wasn't successful. I then waited quite a long time to have the second transfer for different reasons. I just didn't feel ready. And then suddenly I was like, no, I'm ready to do this again.
What do you think made you kind of, because I mean, going through the first one, that must, emotionally, that must be really hard to have a failed one.
Yeah, no, it was really hard. And I think that's what I needed to get over, because it's the sort of anticipation and then the disappointment. And I was like, I don't feel like I can put myself through this again quite now. And I know people do it month after month, but just for me, I thought I just need some time. And I got myself super fit and I just felt mentally really strong. And then I thought, yeah, I'm feeling in the best place I can be. I know you can't ever time these things, but timing felt perfect. So then I went and had the second transfer. And interestingly, this time I didn't tell anyone, just my mum, maybe my bestie. Whereas the last time I told, I'm an oversharer and I told everyone. And then this one, this resulted in my daughter. So that one was successful. So it actually went over quite a long period of time, but that was personal. If the first one would have worked, it would have been super quick. It would have been like a couple of months.
So it turns out Troy, our dog, our Yorkshire Terrier, has arthritis. And since the diagnosis, Dan has been carrying Troy up and down the stairs so that he doesn't hurt his little delicate legs. And every time he does it, it makes my heart explode. What the hell am I going to be like when we have a baby?
How did you feel going into the second one? So, like, obviously you said that the timing and everything felt ready, but how nervous were you that maybe this is not going to work?
You know, I just thought I have to think it's going to work. And then if it doesn't, I know that I can deal with it and I've got good people around me. And the way I approach it is quite positive that it will. I know different people have different, some people almost tell themselves it won't so they don't feel disappointed. But for me, I was like, no, I'm feeling really good that this is going to work, but I know that I can get through it if it doesn't. So I just felt excited and hopeful, I guess.
You know, when you go to the clinic for like your first appointment and you're talking to them about this, like how different are you treated as somebody who wants to go through it on your own versus say a couple who are doing this?
So I personally think that's super dependent on the clinic. So I had a really positive experience. The clinic are really used to treating people on their own. I have heard of others who sort of say they went in and they said, oh, what's your partner's name? And they said, oh, I haven't got a partner. And they almost like put a big red cross through that section on the applicant. And you're like, oh God, you know, and then you have to explain yourself every time you go in. They don't know your personal circumstances. But I personally didn't experience that, but I know it does happen.
And how do the clinic kind of look after you? So obviously they look after you physically and all the sciencey stuff, but do they have like any kind of assistance with the emotion? Because I imagine going through that on your own must be really hard.
Yeah. So they do. There's a mandatory counselling session for people who are using donor conception. And so you have a session with a counsellor to just talk through any concerns that you've got. Again, I've had mixed feedback from people I've spoken to about some have found that invaluable and others, it depends on the counsellor, I guess, have not benefited as much. But what I now do is we get 8 women all together on a conference and we all just talk through it, how we're feeling, how to cope with those feelings. And I just think the power of speaking to other people in exactly the same position as you, and I get so much from it even now, that, you know, meeting those other women in the same situation. So definitely feeling like you're not the only one is really beneficial.
What were your concerns before you did it?
I was concerned whether I'd be lonely. So I just thought it was, you know, it's like letting go of the fairy tale of doing it in a relationship. And it is a fairy tale because, you know, it's not all roses when you're doing it in a partnership. But letting go of that idea was one. The practical support. So would I have anyone to help me if I wanted to do anything? And I suppose, and same for all mums, I guess, but the exhaustion, would I be able to cope just without having that extra person there to support me, were probably the biggest things. I also at the beginning thought, is this fair? Is it fair on the child to bring them into the world without a father figure? But I did loads of thinking about that and thought, do you know what? I've got some amazing guys in my life. My daughter will not be without cool, good male role models. In fact, a variety of role models, female as well. And so I thought, no, I don't think she is going to miss out because she'll have loads of people around her. It won't be one particular, but there'll be many who can influence her positively.
So you decide to go ahead. You find out that you're pregnant. Are you elated? Are you scared? Are you a bit both?
It's funny, actually, because up until that point, I'd literally, the end game was a positive pregnancy test. And I genuinely hadn't really thought much beyond that. So then you get a positive pregnancy test. Then you're like, oh my goodness, this is happening. And then you almost have to start the journey again on the next bit. But I was super excited. I don't make life easy for myself because I lived in Budapest. I was moving to Manchester. I worked in London. I bought a house. I fully renovated it.
Whilst I was pregnant.
So there was no time for worrying about what was going to happen. I was just trying to do all of that before I gave birth.
Flipping heck, I thought I was throwing myself in at the deep end, moving from Leicester to Bristol whilst pregnant in the middle of a pandemic. But I think Mel can pit me to the post on that one. I did find it quite interesting, though, what she was saying about this idea of the fairy tale, because I think we all have that idea of what that is. But in reality, whatever your situation, it ain't a fairy tale. Camilla, is your life a fairy tale?
No. And that, like you said, whatever situation, however you're a parent, however that's come about, there's fairy tale moments, but it is not a fairy tale.
In a way, I feel like her situation is almost more magic. Because it feels like the rarer situation. Yeah. And also, when I was first pregnant and I was feeling so rough and so knackered and grumpy and sick, I would be annoyed at Dan, like, because I was like, you don't have to feel any of this. So it almost made like a bit of a rift between us.
Oh,
whereas
yeah.
I suppose she managed to skip that annoyance
because I was so sick. I couldn't have Ed even sit very near me. But if he wanted to hug me, I'm not saying my husband smells, he smells lovely, but you could smell, like, if I could smell aftershave or cream or shampoo or anything, like, please don't come near me.
I was the same. Dan got a new beard oil and he came in the room and I was like, I was like a sniffer dog. I was like, what's that smell? I was like, there's a different smell on you. I was like, no, I can tell there's something different. And he's going, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, no, there is. And then I sniffed it out and it was the beard oil. And it's actually quite lovely and I like it now, but God, I didn't like it then.
No smells. So actually, in that situation, being on your own would have been a hell of a lot better. You could only be annoyed with your own smell.
Yeah, living the dream.
What did your friends and family say when you first said to them, guys, I'm thinking about doing this on my own?
See, the way I did it was almost like a slow burn over a period of time. So I, right at the beginning, was like, I think I might have to look at doing this on my own. You know, where before it was really a real thing. And then I was like, you know, I mentioned looking, I actually think I am going to do that. And so I almost feel like people had come along on the journey with me a bit whilst it was just an idea. But when it became actually this is a reality, they were kind of, it wasn't a shock. They were on board. And honestly, most of my friends, well, some of them were like, finally, because I'd been considering, they were like, yes, good. You've been talking about this for so long. Good. You're now going to do it. And pretty much everyone was supportive and says, we know you can do it. You'll make an amazing mum. We don't want you to miss out. We know how much it means to you.
And so how was the pregnancy? Obviously you were kind of busy, but how was the pregnancy?
It was good. I think that the first 3 months were tough, as quite a few people have. So I was really tired. In some ways, because I was on my own, you can do what you want. Like, I went to bed at 6 o'clock quite a few times. I didn't have to worry about being sociable with anyone else. I could just kind of manage it myself. Then all the rest of the pregnancy was good. I had my mum as my birthing partner. So she started to come to antenatal classes with me to just get ready for the birth. And it was pretty easy, to be honest.
How was it going to the antenatal classes with your mum? Like, what was the rest of the group like? Was it the traditional kind of straight couples and then you and your mum, or was it...
Yeah, so honestly, I had an irrational fear of going to antenatal classes. You make a decision to become a solo mum and your fear is going to an antenatal class. It's weird. It was definitely irrational. And I built it up into my mind. And when I got there, everybody else was in a couple, but it was amazing. I'm so glad I went. They were all really welcoming. I told them immediately, this is what I've done. This is my mum and she's my birthing partner and this is why she's here. And they were all like, awesome, you know, well done you.
Also, in fairness, some of them would have been thinking, oh God, I wish I could have my mum as a partner. Do you know what I mean? Because they get it. Like,
it's so true. And actually, they kept on saying that. They were like, oh, we, you know, we'll invite your mum. Can your mum do this? So yeah, no, my mum fitted in really well there. It was good. And it, you know, I tell everybody, because quite a few people that seem hesitant to go on their own or with a friend. And I say, go, because you meet people there who... When you're on maternity leave, it's usually all the women together anyway. It makes no odds if you've got a partner or not. You don't feel left out at all. And in fact, quite the opposite. It's, you haven't got some of the same problems that, you know, you're not having to deal with your relationship with a partner or a husband. You're only having to deal with your relationship with a newborn. So there's pros and cons. It's like there's some things that are easier, honestly. So I advise everyone to go. I found it really useful.
How was childbirth?
It was long. So I had to be induced because I was overdue. And I think I was in hospital for 2 days, going on for 3 days being induced. God. But nothing was happening. Okay. I was just there waiting. And then finally, it all sort of kicked off. And then they said to me, I feel like you... possibly this is going to end in a cesarean, because I don't know how long you can go on. You're not very dilated. It's going to take a long time. And I was like, okay, fine, let's do it. Because I was in quite a lot of pain by then. So I had a cesarean. My mum was there with me. So it was long and tiring. And I had to stay in hospital for quite a few days because I had an infection. But, you know, it was fine.
How did it feel the moment that the baby was delivered and you got to hold her? And...
Yeah, it was overwhelming. I guess lots of mums feel like that. But I was a bit like, gosh, after all this deciding and thinking and planning and trying and for her to finally be here. Yeah, overwhelmed, but absolute delight as well.
Do you know what? It's a bit like, you know, you were saying, like, you go through the process of looking into how am I going to do IVF on my own? And then you go into the, oh, okay, well, how I'm going to do the getting pregnant. And that, and then that happens. And I imagine when the baby comes, you almost are back to the start again going, oh, okay, well, I really wanted this baby, but now what do I do?
Now I have to look after them. Exactly. This. So, and do you know what's hard? People spend so long deciding. Then if they finally decide they do want to do this, it is exactly what you say. Then you have to start this fertility journey and it's not easy. And you almost think, oh, I've made the decision to do it. That's it. But actually, that's just the start. And then, yeah, you have a baby and that's definitely just the start. But I had an agreement with my mum that she'd stay for 2 weeks to help me, particularly because I'd had a cesarean. And actually, she stayed for 10 nights and then she left. And I was like, bye then. We'll be fine, don't worry. But I knew I just had to go for it. Yeah. And actually it was fine. And at the beginning she came a lot and helped me. So it was all good.
So then you have this brand new baby that you're like, what do I do with this? How's it been?
Yeah, I mean, the beginning, it is nerve-wracking on your own because you've just never had to look after a baby before. You don't know what you're doing particularly. It was like, is this normal? Is that right? Is she breathing too fast? Is she too hot? So there was a bit of the anxiety about, is everything okay?
And was Google your best friend?
Of course.
Your mom and Google.
Google and actually the WhatsApp group of the NCT girls. And then they were like, oh no, we all feel like, and I was like, okay, good. And as she has got older, I've just found it easier and easier. And now I feel like we're in a complete routine and it's awesome.
Hormones are so fucking weird. So obviously in lockdown, everyone's doing all the quizzes. So it's our weekly quiz. I just wrote a good quiz question and I cried because it was so good. Do you know the question? What is wrong with me? In the Dolly Parton song, 9 to 5,
She tumbles out of bed and stumbles to the kitchen. What does she pour herself when she gets there? In case you were wondering, like, I feel like I should put you out of your misery just in case. So Dolly Parton tumbles out of bed and stumbles to the kitchen, and she pours herself a cup of ambition. But you got that. Why did that make me cry?
Have you had any negative responses to deciding to do it on your own?
I've had one person who was in my friendship group who disagrees with the decision, and unfortunately we are now no longer friends. But out of what I would say is quite a big friendship group, it was just that one. I've done a lot of interviews and stuff talking about it because I don't want anyone else to feel isolated like I did when they're making the decision. And the vast majority of responses that you get are positive, one or two depending on what sort of publication it is online. I've seen people say it's selfish, and selfish to bring a child into the world with knowing that they won't know their father.
Plenty of kids are brought into this world and they don't know their father anyway.
Yeah.
Or they don't have a good relationship with their mother or their father. Or, yeah. Like, there's all kinds of...
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I think myself and pretty much all the women I speak to who do this, it's so well thought through. It's so well planned and prepared for. And all of these things, like I say, I've got a really good social network who I feel really are a positive influence on Daisy. So I don't think she misses out from that point of view. So I feel like... going into parenthood is selfish anyway. No one's having a child for the sake of humanity. We want a child. And my desire to have a child is no different to any other person who
That's
wants
so
a child.
True.
I haven't been lucky enough to find a partner.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not really any different from anybody else in that respect.
How will you explain it to Daisy, or have you explained it, or like what's the...
Yeah, no, so I already talk about it now, and what I've done is I've made a little book, and it's called My Family, and it's basically got all pictures of, it's got me and Daisy, it's got my parents, so her grandparents, all of our family, and then it's got some of our friends who I would count as family. And she goes, because she's just starting to talk, she's like, granddad, granny, uncle Dan, and she points at people and she knows who they all are. And then at the back, when you use a sperm donor, you get a little bit of information about them. So I've just made like a nice picture, putting the information that I know about him. And he's written a letter to explain why he donated, and I've put that in. And I've just put a little simple explanation about what it means to be a donor, so that you need an egg and a sperm, and you put it in a woman's tummy, and that's how a baby is made. So just a very simplistic way. And I read that to her, and I'm sure at the moment she doesn't understand the details, but as she grows up, I'll just explain in more and more, you know, terms for her age. And it will just be her normal. That's what she's used to. I feel like I'm super confident about it. She will be as well.
Yeah. I hope this doesn't sound like a weird question. Mm-hmm. Did you get any say in what kind of sperm you wanted to use?
You do. So it really depends on which clinic you use, how it works. But personally for me, I filled out a questionnaire saying what would my ideal sort of characteristics be, and then they provide you two choices that match that criteria. Now, you haven't got that much to go on, you know, it's like hair color, eye color, height. There's other things, and it depends on personal preference whether you think this is relevant, like education, is that really relevant? I don't know. Religion, is that something you're born with? Probably not. Yeah. I personally don't think. But then if you use one of the big sperm banks, like particularly the American sperm banks, which you can use in the UK, you get voice notes, you get pictures of babies, you get pictures of adulthood, so like, and you've got like 50, 100 choices. So personally for me, I found the way it worked for me easier because you've got two choices and people are like, oh, but only two. And I said, but I said what characteristics I wanted. Both of these have got them. What else am I looking for?
Yeah.
And the other thing I say is, you know, for anyone who's dating, how many times I've been on an internet date thinking, this is definitely the one. This is my ideal man. Everything stacks up. This is going to be amazing. And then going home thinking, okay, that was not. No. Yeah. It's the same. You don't know. You'd never meet that person. You can only go on what they've written. So at the end of the day, I feel like you've just got to go with your gut.
Okay, brutal question, Camilla. You met Ed and you loved everything about him, and that's why you decided you wanted to get married and you wanted to have babies. But obviously, when you're picking the characteristics of a sperm donor, you can be super picky. So is there anything that you would add to the list of characteristics that Ed doesn't have, or anything that you would remove from his characteristics? Because, ooh, that one thing's a bit annoying.
This is going to sound so cheesy, but honestly, no.
Oh, you're disgusting.
No, I really don't. Oh God, it's bad, isn't it?
My life isn't a fairy tale, but I just love everything about him.
You're doing though.
So speaking of dating,
yes.
Obviously you are mumming solo. When you considered, okay, I'm going to do this baby thing on my own, did you think about the fact that, you know, like you said, that this kind of disrupts the fairy tale thing?
Yeah.
And so potentially then, if you wanted to meet someone, it might also make it a bit trickier.
So I thought is I'm doing it in the reverse order. I thought I'm going to have a baby first because that's got a time limit. And then I'm going to meet a guy because that hasn't got a time limit. Do you know, I didn't think it would be more difficult. I may attract different people. Some people may not want to date me because I've got a child, but then I also wouldn't want to date them if that's their view. So I didn't think it would make it more difficult, and actually I don't think it has made it more difficult. When I've been on dates now, it's so much easier because I'm just thinking, do I connect with this guy? Not
has he got good sperm?
Exactly. And would he want a baby? Would he want it tomorrow? Because I'm running out of time. So yeah, it makes it a lot easier, honestly. But right now, I'm super content with how things are. I'm really, really open and positive towards meeting someone. But if it happens...
So what, just remind me the ages. So what age was it when you went to the fertility
so
clinic?
So I first went at 37. I had Daisy when I was 39, and now I'm 41.
Because I'm just comparing it to me. So I'm going, like, so when you first went to the fertility clinic, did they kind of give you an idea of like, oh, maybe you have a couple more years to wait, or did you just want to jump straight in?
So they will do what is sort of commonly known as a fertility MOT, where they can tell you what your fertility is like. But having now worked in the fertility industry and met lots of people from there, I understand there is no test that can really tell you about your fertility. It can tell you there's an issue. It can identify problems. But what you can measure is how many eggs you've got left. Yeah. Which gives you an indication. What you can't measure is the quality of those eggs. And that's what's important. So I'd already decided I was going to go for it when I went. And my tests came back average. So it didn't really give me any other information.
Yes, not
exactly. If I think what some women do is they go and have a fertility MOT and then they're like, oh my days, I need to crack on with this because it tells them that it's not as good as it should be for their age. But if it just comes back average, it doesn't really tell you anything. You still don't know what's going to happen when you start trying.
Were there any points in the process, either before, during the pregnancy, or even now, that you thought, am I doing the right thing?
So before, I kept thinking, I wish I could do this with a guy. Mm-hmm. And it's awful. I just thought, I wish I could just do this in a normal way. Why do I have to be the one who's doing it in a different way? Now I couldn't think more. I love my situation now. So I talk to people about life scripts. Our life script is that we would meet a man, get married. Get married, maybe not so much these days, but and have children. And if you look at all the films out there, that is the happily ever after. And so I feel like it was just in my head that that is what I should be doing. And I felt a little bit like, have I just failed a bit here by not being able to do this? So it was more around that than anything else. But did I want to be a mum? Was I doing the right thing progressing it? I never questioned it because I feel lucky because some people are like, I don't know if I want to, and I'm single. So now I'm really confused. Whereas because I absolutely knew without a shadow of a doubt, it made it easier to make the decision.
What would your advice be to someone who is maybe going through that feeling like you had of thinking, I haven't met anyone yet, and maybe I want to go for this on my own, but are having those kind of, is this almost admitting defeat, almost like I'm admitting that I failed? Like, what would your advice be to anyone in that kind of boat?
So I think there's a couple of things. So first of all, I would say if you're in this position at all, have a fertility MOT. So go and check, is there anything specific? Because if you find something specific, it might just help you make a decision. The second thing I would say is let go of any feelings of failure, because it's in history for some reason that we seem to be judged. Success is meeting a man and then being able to have a baby. And why does that have to be the measure of success? So I think it's really working through those feelings of failure, and absolutely that isn't a failure. And then I would say my big thing is get your support network in place. So if you're going to do this, then you don't want to do it absolutely on your own. You might not be doing it with a partner, but I'm doing it with an army of people supporting me. So it's starting to talk to people and reach out to other people who have done it and get a bit more of an insight into the reality of what it's like. Because I have to say, it isn't for everyone. So there are some people who maybe if you can't meet someone, you don't want to become a mum. I totally get that. But I think reaching out and speaking to others who've done it to get a bit more of the reality of it.
Is it everything you thought it would be?
Oh, it sounds cheesy, doesn't it? But I feel like it is, and more. Just seeing her, like having the privilege of seeing her develop and learn new words. And like recently she's been like putting her arms around my neck and giving me a big hug. And, you know, just hearing it in the morning, she says, "Mummy, like come and get me out of my cot." And oh, just all little things like that. It's amazing.
What a woman. Loved Mel and absolutely loved her story.
Just amazing. I loved listening to her.
Would you have done it on your own? Because I think you would.
Yes, definitely.
And listening to her talking about it, I imagine probably makes you think, I definitely would.
Yes and no. I think she's probably handled it a hell of a lot better than I would have. If you asked me before I had a baby if I would have done it, then I'd have been like, yes, yes, yes. Knowing how hard it is sometimes if Ed's away, like not having that other pair of hands, if I'd have known that before, I might have had a slightly different idea of it. But having said that, my want for having children far outweighs that. So yeah, I think I would have done it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You might have.
No, do you know what? I say that I wouldn't. Before I met Dan, I think it was probably not long after my 30th birthday when I did think there was even then was getting the, you're not getting any younger, you know, kind of comments. And I think I did think about it, because when I was younger, I did think, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to have kids. And the wobble only came actually at the point where I was getting towards the point where I had to make a decision. And so I don't know if it was the pressure or what that did it. But I don't think I had enough of a want to have done it on my own. But one thing I do think is, I get what you're saying, because you know now what parenthood is like, but you've only known what parenthood is like as a couple. And
absolutely.
I think if you've only ever done it on your own, you just make it work. By the sounds of it, like, I mean, maybe Mel's just a superhero and is making it sound like a doddle. But if you do want any info on how to go about it on your own, she is your woman. So her website is thestalkandi.com. Catchy name. So www.thestalkandi.com. So if you are listening to this thinking, hey, maybe I want to give it a go on my Todd, then she will happily help you with advice. follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it hugely help us out, but it will guarantee that your idea of fairy tale parenthood really will come true. Maybe.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
The whole wording and conversation around it is giving up. You're not giving up because we all get to a point, I think, where we have to let go.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.